Welcome to the latest episode of the Catalyst Health, Wellness, and Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Bradford Cooper. And while I've never personally met today's guest, I feel like he's been a mentor of mine for about the past three decades. Dr. Tom Peters was the co-author of the original business book, In Search of Excellence, way back in 1982, a book that's often tagged as one of the best business books ever, if not number one on the list. I picked it up when I was pursuing my MBA back in the early 90s and eventually absorbed seven more of his books over the years. His writing shaped much of my approach to business, both corporately and as an entrepreneur. And those of you who have participated in our Wellness Coach business planning huddles, you can be pretty sure that at least one of my recommendations to you came directly from Dr. Tom Peters. Now, speaking of business, if you find yourself listening to this and you're thinking this whole idea of an accredited, meaningful coach being part of your organization's wellness program would have a positive influence on the lives of your employee team members, feel free to reach out. Email is results@catalystcoachinginstitute.com. We can get some time on the calendar to connect individually. We consistently work closely with other employee wellness program providers, so you don't have to start your program over to integrate this type of coaching, this best-in-class coaching, into your current program. It's very easy to do. It can literally be done almost overnight. And if you're a provider listening to this and you'd like to add coaching to what you're offering, this best-in-class, nationally board-certified coaching, we love working with others. So drop me a note and we can talk about details. Now, it's time to listen in on the conversation with one of the great business minds over the past 50 years as he shares his thoughts about health, wellness, and business on this episode of the Catalyst Health, Wellness, and Performance Podcast. We've had some amazing guests on the podcast over the first 85 episodes or so, but I am probably never been more excited to have a guest than today's guest, Mr. Tom Peters. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the incredibly over-the-top introduction.
Oh, it gets worse. I'm a big fan, and people are going to get that right here. I've got eight of your books sitting right on my bookshelf next to me here, along with the old Tom Peters exclamation point hat, The Work Matters. I can even remember, I was thinking about this morning, getting ready for the interview, your book, Reimagined. I remember getting that book. I mean, I can remember where I was when I cracked it open, and my coworkers were looking at me like, you're just a weirdo. Like, what? How can you be that excited about a book? But it was powerful stuff. And then you look at your brand new 50 stuff. I probably recommended that to hundreds, if not thousands of people. I think you have about 16 books that you've published. If you were to look back at one that could be republished today, brand new, nobody had ever seen it before, which one do you think would be the most impactful in the world we're in right now?
Boy, I'm going to give you two answers.
Okay.
I'm going to cheat. number one is I love the design of Reimagine. And I think we were in the right place at the right time for that book. And I think it is particularly well fit for today. But I'm gonna tell you one that you might not even have. So when the Brand New 50 book came out, it was one of a series of three.
Yes,
got it. And the second one was called The Wow Project 50, and the third one was called The Professional Service Firm 50. And that one, people could call the most boring, and I do hope that I don't suffer from hopeless arrogance, but I believe if people had taken that little thin book seriously, a whole lot of people wouldn't have lost their jobs. Because the idea of the professional service firm 50 is you're in a middle-sized company and they're outsourcing left and right, and you're in a 10-person training department. And, you know, outsourcing is a distinct possibility, an extraordinarily distinct possibility. And I said, look, get ahead of the curve. Take that training department, which is in a big company, and act as if you were an independent professional Yes. service firm providing products and services that would knock the customer's socks off, and appoint yourself managing director of Training Inc., a six-person corporation which is, you know, within a 35-person HR department, which is in a 500-person division of a $1 trillion company. But I think, you know, so many jobs like that went right down the drain. And, you know, a lot of it was inevitable, to be sure. But I really fault the imagination of people who were, you know, in department head jobs and couldn't imagine themselves in that form. So I think it could have been the most valuable of the lot.
Well, and that's one of the books I've got here. In fact, as you mentioned it, I pull it over and I've just got pen marks all over the place and, you know, circles and asterisks and everything else. And I think for our audience today, not all of them, but a lot of folks listening are trying to build their own wellness coaching business, or they are the head of, like you say, a department focused on helping the employees at their company get involved with a wellness program.
Yep.
But let me just repeat that. It's the Professional Service Firm 50 Reinventing Work Series, and it is outstanding. 50 Ways to Transform Your Department into a Professional Service Firm. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go forward, but I think I'm glad you
read the rest of the subtitle.
You got it. 50 Ways to Transform Your, in quotes, department into a professional service firm whose trademarks are passion and innovation. And of course, there's an exclamation point on the end of that.
Of course there is. Yep.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, let's go off in the health and wellness arena right now briefly. In 2008, I've looked back and found you said we have ridiculously under-attended issues surrounding prevention and wellness. It's now a decade later. What are your thoughts on the progress or lack of progress in terms of health and wellness broadly?
Well, first of all, I do not in any way, shape, or form want to pretend to be an expert. I would judge that things are better, but a million miles from optimal. One of the reasons, and you can tell me whether I'm all wet, but you know, I had a full left knee replacement about 2 months ago, which embeds me right in the middle of the health care system. And relative to you know, the people who are listening to you who are dealing with Medicare and Medicaid, and I know that's the case with the physical therapy group that I'm going to now. What a god-awful bureaucratic mess our healthcare system is. And, you know, I think you can do fabulous work, and my physical therapy people are doing fabulous work, but I don't envy them.
Right.
You know, they're working with me in a modest size, but very good space. And honest to God, and this has got to apply to an insane number, I think, of the people you're listening to, they have to spend half their time on their tablet entering stuff. In my case, I've now had 16 sessions, and in order to go another 10 sessions, which they think I need and I think I need, they've got to justify that to Medicare. And that means they've got to give me a test with 100 questions and ask me stuff. And it's not that I'm irritated. I'm not actually want to weep for them. But the amount of, you know, a bureaucratic crap that they've got to go through is horrifying. I saw there was a story which is related that was in the I live in the so-called South Coast of Massachusetts, about 70 miles south of Boston. And it was in the Boston Globe, and it came from Massachusetts General Hospital, MGH, where I happen to have my surgery. And it said that since tablet had been introduced at bedside, measured, and this is not an anecdotal stuff, measured nurse-patient eye contact had gone down 70%.
Wow.
Now, this is an area where I do know the science pretty well. And, you know, patient eye contact is, you know, as good as any pill that's ever been invented. If people really are in, you know, if the nurse and the patient are making eye contact, you see these studies that say recovery time or number of days in the hospital go down by 20%. And so I was furious when I read that statistic. And then my heart rate went up another 10 or 20 beats when I read that the stuff that the nurses are entering in the tablet at bedside, 50 to 60% of it is billing information. Mm-hmm. And honest to God, I did not want to go out and shoot somebody. I am not a closet shooter. But I wanted to shoot myself because it was tragic because, you know, like the people who are listening to us, you know, I'm sure that every hospital as big as MGH has two nurses who don't care very much, but the people I've worked with, you know, really do want their patients to improve and have a better life. And, you know, the world is conspiring against them.
Well, and a lot of folks listening are the health and wellness coaches. So they're actually not integrated into the healthcare system unless they work for the hospital providing services, maybe for the employees. I love what you're talking about, that personal connection. Even if it's telephonic, they're connecting with them individually, focused on that person, and not just running through a script or a checklist or something like that.
Oh boy, that is, you know, we could spend the rest of our time on that topic alone. You know, there's a book that came out recently called The Techies and the Fuzzies. And the subtitle is something about why the liberal arts will rule Silicon Valley in the future. But the point is that it is the soft variables, which is the smile and is the disposition, which frankly are as important or frankly more important than the hard stuff and the technical stuff. And particularly, I would think in an area like wellness, you know, 90% of the wellness issue is psychological. You know, if I am doing a good job at home with the exercises that I have learned officially, it's because fundamentally the therapists who I am working with have really done a fabulous job of making it clear that it's up to me and they've done it in a decent way. And the other thing, which is, you know, when I did my original training for my PhD, it involved an awful lot of psychology. And I have got one PT person who I am working with, and honest to God, including my wonderful first grade teacher 100 years ago, this person is the best teacher I have come across. He really, really knows how to give, you know, I snicker a little bit because I know he's over the top and then he snickers back, but he does the greatest job in the world in absolutely acknowledging every little tiny thing that I do right and encouraging me and so on. And it is, as again, as you know, wellness with a capital W or physical therapy from a knee, it is a game of inches or hundredths of inches. It is not a game of feet, yard, and 100 yards for touchdown. It's, you know, it's just, and I love it when I run to somebody like that. My wife and I, which is directly what you're talking about. My wife and I have a trainer who comes to visit us for an hour each week, and she's in the same league. I know how bad a shape I'm in, and Jody makes me feel good. We do say, and I will do this without the full explanation of the word, I assure you, but Jody and I have this thing because she also pushes me hard. I say, your name is not Jody. Your name is effing Jody. She pushes me so darn. And she loves it. And I love it. And, you know, proof of the pudding, which is the kind of evaluation your folks should be making, is when Jody and her husband went off for an anniversary, we sent them both a bottle of champagne to the restaurant we knew that they were going to. And, you know, which reminds me, I used to have a newsletter. My company had a newsletter. And I think one of my favorite stories, and we had it for probably 10 years, and so there were a jillion newsletters. One of my favorite stories, which again directly applies to the people who are listening to you and me, was a dentist who measured his customer satisfaction by the number of people who brought cookies and pies in to thank him for what he'd done. And he counted them. And I loved it. I thought it was absolutely one of the 10 most brilliant things I'd ever heard in my life.
That's great. Well, and we have a lot of physical therapists and personal trainers that end up going on to become certified wellness coaches. So I know those listening appreciate you giving the thumbs up and the kudos. So I'm glad to hear it's been a good experience. One of the things that stood out to me, and I think you shifted this even further over the years, but initially you talked about moving from ready, aim, fire, to ready, fire, aim. And I think eventually almost to fire, and we'll just adjust right. On the fly. Can you talk our audience through that may not be familiar with it, and maybe where you've landed on that today?
Well, the real point is that relative to your practice or what have you, you've got to test and try new stuff every day.
Yes.
And, you know, I said to you before we went on the air, you know, back to my healthcare, you picked a good time to have this interview. I just came from an echo stress test, and there was new software that had just been installed yesterday, and the tech was a wonderful guy with a wonderful attitude, but you could see the tears pouring out of his eyes as he tried to take a particular image and see if he could get it right. But the point is, there are things like software, obviously, and that's happening very much in your folks' world. And you've got to be playing with them, and you've got to be experimenting. And when you play an experiment, the faster you can make the largest number of mistakes, the better. And it's all about improvement. And improvement means trying new stuff and trying new stuff and trying new stuff. That's what Ready, Fire, Aim means. It means don't sit there. Don't create a grand plan. Just get the heck. There's a woman, Linda Kaplan Thaler, who was an advertising person and did it well enough and started her own firm that she's in the Advertising Hall of Fame. And she said, "We never had a vision. We never had a plan. Our whole goal was to do the absolute positive best that we could do every minute that we had client contact." And she said at the top of that list is trying new stuff, testing new stuff, pushing people just a little bit, and so on. So I'm definitely a ready, fire, aim person. I am, believe it or not, there are people this old. I am 77 years old, and I have never worked from a plan in my entire life. And God willing, never will.
I love it. I love it. Love it.
I mean, look, we're not working with a plan. It sounds kind of outrageous, but the point is I let experience guide me to where I'm going to go next.
Yes.
You know, and I hope, you know, if there's a plan, it's the plan that Ms. Kaplan Thaler had, which is to make every minute for the client an incredibly great minute. And there's no issue about that. But in terms of what I'm working on or topics that I'm working on, and I'm working on something new now, you know, it's a function of what I trip over and what catches my interest and so on.
Well, I think there's a huge value for that for these coaches that are trying to find their place in the world and who their clients could be and all that. It doesn't help to lay out a 50-page business plan that's going to sit on your bookshelf. It's that constant trial, error, and then wind back around. So love.
Yeah, absolutely. And somewhere on my bookshelf, and I unfortunately don't know the author's name because I could recommend it if I did, I have a book. It's a thin book, probably 80 or 90 pages, really well done. And it's called The One Page Business Plan. Mm. And, you know, I really buy that act. It's a general notion of, you know, where you're heading and then, you know, shut up and get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. Move. All right. So speaking of move, exclamation points. That has been, I don't know if Guinness is aware that you're currently the world record holder in the use of that for published books, but it's part of your brand. It's who you are. But it doesn't, as I was looking back through In Search of Excellence, it doesn't really show up there ever. What's the story on how the exclamation point became almost a mirror image of Tom Peters?
Well, I will spare you the long story. The reason it wasn't in Search of Excellence was not that it wasn't in my work, but it was that at the time we decided to tone the book down, and the definition of we is my co-author. And he was absolutely right, because it was 1982 and the world was not ready for that. We were getting beaten up by the Japanese badly and so on. And it was coming from my working life at McKinsey and people wanted words that were powerful, and I think they were powerful. Obviously, a whole lot of people bought the book.
Sure.
But exclamation marks were a bridge too far. One of my friends at McKinsey actually threatened to quit because one of my drafts of the book basically was rewritten without the exclamation marks. And he said, "That's not you." you know, the exclamation mark, I haven't got a good answer. I think it probably came largely from my mom, who had enough energy to sink a ship. I've had a lot of people say nice things about me and a lot of people who didn't as well. But I said recently, this was a couple of years ago, I got my favorite compliment of all. And it was after a seminar I'd given, and some guy came up to me, and he was probably in his early 40s, and he said, "My God, I cannot wait to be 70 if I can have as much energy as you do." But the point relative to what we're talking about here is a different point. The energy is, you know, I am going to use inappropriate language now. The energy is because I give a shit. I really care about this stuff. And I'm irritated because I say to people, if you say thank you to somebody, they will be your slave for life. If you, you know, just do these little touches, the human touches, and I have a lot of energy because of how much I'm pissed off that I can't get through. I said to somebody, nothing in any of my books requires an above freezing IQ. It is very, very basic and very, very straightforward. And it is largely about little human touches. And there is nothing that you can't try by mid-afternoon today.
Tom, I'm loving this. All right. Speaking of that, excellence is the next 5 minutes. That's something that you've been talking a little bit more about even more recently in your recent book that we're going to touch on in a second. But I love that statement. You talk about power. Excellence is the next 5 minutes. Could you take us on a deeper dive into that?
It involves a slight grudge, albeit one should never have a grudge with one's publisher. My last book was called The Excellence Dividend, and that's because they wanted it to be whatever the subtitle. I wanted the title of that book to be Excellence is the Next 5 Minutes. And the point of it is people think of excellence as, you know, Mount Everest that you have to climb and so on. And my whole point that your approach to life, your approach to the way things get done, your approach to what you're doing is purely a function of what you do in the next 5 minutes. And I'm going to give you a little example. I mean, one of the things I say is excellence is your next 7-line email, or excellence is your next, you know, 2-line text, or what have you. And let me give you a little tiny example and tell me if this resonates with you. We have an accountant. My wife and I have an accountant who helps us with some stuff. And, you know, we communicate back and forth. And I have a lot of typographical errors in my emails because A, I'm a lousy typist, and B, I go too fast. And if I send you an email, I'm probably just going to write you the text about, yeah, you know, talk to you tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Every email that I get from the people on this staff begins with, "Hi, Tom, comma, space," and then the text. And then at the end, it says, "Thanks, comma, space, Barbara or Dale or whoever it is." And that, you know, I have no idea how people who are listening to us will react. But that hit me right between the eyes. It was just that little teeny effort to humanize it, the little teeny effort that suggested thoughtfulness rather than I'm running behind schedule for 7 minutes. I want you to know this thing, but then let's get on with life. It's that I you know, people are either at this point going to turn it off or whatever. But when I get the high Tom, it was like a, you know, like a giant jillion watt lamp going off in my face. And I said to somebody, and I actually tested this with a shrink, I said, if a person who is a manager or a leader gives me 10 line emails I can do a technically correct, complete psychiatric analysis of that person. And a shrink friend of mine said, well, you may be exaggerating a little bit, but you're 90% on the mark. It's the thoughtfulness, the care. I mean, go back to the typos. Typos are awful. A typo says, I don't care. You know, I'm going so fast and I know we're all hassled and so on. But, you know, and there are people who are going to listen to this and say, I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. Typographical error says, I don't care enough to do it right. And, you know, as I said, I'm in the middle of physical therapy. It is the tiny adjustments that they help me make and so on that make all the difference in the world. And I have no doubt that 99% of your wellness coaches would certainly agree with that. But it's the tiny stuff that gives away who you are. My mother was a Southerner. She came from Virginia, and she taught me to say thank you. I said to somebody, if you want to understand my mother, we would be opening Christmas presents, and halfway through, she would come to a stop and force me to send thank you notes to all the people who had sent the first half. The truth of the matter is, just between you and me and the audience, there's a little bit of an exaggeration, but not much. And she did make me a thank. There was this guy, and I wrote about him in the last book. What's his name? Conan. First name, I can't remember. He was the chief executive officer of Campbell's Soup. And he was chief executive officer for 10 years. In 10 years, he sent 30,000 handwritten thank you notes to people, mainly lower level employees. And that's basically 15 per working day for 10 years.
Wow.
And you know, it is just a wow. And, you know, the other one, which, you know, I'm sure given the nature of the industry, there are an awful lot of people who are a long, 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 long way from 77. But yes, it may be 2020, but there is power to a handwritten note. And there's almost more power because you never get them. You know, I had a guy who years ago who was a division general manager at 3M, and he had listened to me lecture about this stuff, and he attended a seminar of mine, and he came up to me at one point and he said, I've got one for you. He said, I just had my retirement party, and a guy came up to me half in tears to thank me for a thank you note that I had sent him a dozen years ago that he still had taped to the wall of his cubicle. I said in my book, the most powerful word in the English language is acknowledgement. And, you know, a lot of the people who are also listening to us are running their own shops with a half a dozen people or two people or eight people or what have you. And this came from somebody somebody on Twitter. And the guy who, you know, has a proven track record, said the four most important words in any organization are, what do you think? What can you tell me? What have you learned? What do you think? And that's acknowledgement. It's acknowledgement that I care enough about you that I want to hear what the heck you have to say.
Perfect. Perfect. That leads nicely into the next question. Your latest book, Excellence Dividend, it's pretty pertinent to wellness right now because a lot of it is becoming, in quotes, automated. I don't know if that works or not, but with AI-based techs, websites, apps that theoretically help create these behavior change things that we're trying to do as coaches, what advice would you give to the health and wellness coach or the wellness program manager who believes in the importance of that personal connection, that one-on-one, that relationship with a coach, but is facing basically ever cheaper costs with this automation process that's going on around the coaching?
Yeah, well, obviously, I can't give a pat answer to that.
Sure.
First of all, to acknowledge the power of it, the smartest human beings on Earth are working for Facebook. They all have PhDs in computer science from Stanford, and their whole life is about making micro adjustments to code so that they will hook you and me a little bit more than they have in the past. And obviously a lot of the wellness process is about hooking people on habits. And in wellness, it's for the best of reasons. Sometimes at Facebook, often, in fact, it's not for the best of reasons. But to begin with, I will not do anything other than acknowledge the power of those tools, because wellness people are in the micro habit business. So use the best tools to the maximum extent possible. Now, I don't know the demographics of who's listening to us, but I would use those tools. I would not avoid them in any way. Bust your back to have the personal contact. And yes, I know I didn't grow up with an iPhone from birth, and I understand the power of the device, but face-to-face communication, back to those nurses who have lost it, face-to-face communication is worth its weight in gold. And if I am running a wellness program, I am going to move heaven and earth to use the tools, but keep the personalized part of it. And I think it's going to be a win.
Very good. Very good.
Well, what's your reaction to what I said? Because you're in the middle of this.
Yeah, we generally agree. Where I'm struggling with it is we have the technology, and I'll be the first to tell you, we use the technology. That's part of who we are. But we see that being supportive to the coaching versus the other way around. A lot of models now are building the model around the technology and saying, oh yeah, and there's a little bit of coaching over here, and end up having...
Right.
1 or 2% of their employees actually engage with a coach. And we just see that model as off its rocker. We start with the coach, start with that personal relationship, and then support that with all these other wonderful, amazing, incredible tools. But I think people
have flipped the
model in the wrong direction, and we're trying to flip it back to say, wait a minute, you're missing the most important part.
Yeah, no, I wish there was something higher than 100%, because I so much agree with that. There's a somewhat technical version of that, albeit not very sophisticated, and that is IA versus AI. AI is artificial intelligence, which means artificial intelligence which is meant to displace human beings. IA stands for intelligence augmented. And that means that who you are is augmented by the tool. The tool doesn't take your place. And I think that's exactly I like that one distinction. And I think that's exactly what we're talking about. One of the people who I wrote about and made a big deal of in the Excellence Dividend is a bank, and almost all the banks are closing their branches. And this bank is absolutely creating the world's best branches. He's turned them into entertainment centers. He makes them excited. The employees have incredible latitude to help the customer, whatever the customer's problem is. So, yeah, I think it's totally, absolutely nutty beyond belief to put the technology before the person. And if I'm wrong, I'm willing to be wrong, but I still want to spend my life in a way where I get to be around people. Perfect. Can't live without it. I said to somebody, and my mom may have been part of this as well, I'm one of those people who loves to talk to strangers. And my wife said, why do you always talk to cab drivers? And we happen to be in Washington. And I said, well, because half the cab drivers in Washington are Ethiopians. They have been through starvation. They have been through revolution. There was probably a second cousin who was assassinated 3 blocks away. Their life is so much more interesting than our life. And, you know, because we are all spoiled brats by comparison. And, I was in a grocery store the other day and ran into a woman in the aisle. I was just picking up paper towels and so on. So this is a woman I don't know. She's, I guarantee you, nowhere near a Me Too event. But we ended up with a 5-minute discussion about padded toilet paper versus unpadded toilet paper. And it's just people are, I dare not say this, and probably it's even inappropriate relative to your business model. In the wellness business, there's a software company that, again, I wrote about in the new book, and it's a pharmaceutical company, for God's sakes, one of the new biotech companies. And the CEO said, we only hire nice people. And he said that's as true for a chemist job as it is for a receptionist job. He said, when you get up to those chemist jobs, the reality is it requires a PhD, but there are a lot of PhDs don't hire the jerks. And, you know, I've long been a Southwest Airlines fan, and I was a great pal of the recently, alas, deceased Herb Kelleher, who started it. And Colleen Barrett was his president. And Colleen said, when we're hiring somebody, we look for listening, caring, smiling, saying thank you, and being warm. And she said, that is as true for the pilots and the mechanics as it is for the in-flight or gate personnel. And I think that's 80% of their difference. You know, they're getting a little bit corporate now that unfortunately Herb has gone away, and I think some of that's evaporating. But the great Southwest Airlines that I love, really, and that's wonderful terms, listening, caring, smiling, saying thank you, and being warm, and being nice, particularly in the wellness business. Because, again, per what we were saying before, with or without software, you're trying to get me to do things which for 2% of the audience who are the fitness nuts, you know, they not only need to be not encouraged, you got to tell them to back off an eighth of a degree. But for the other 98% of us, urging us on to new heights, one eighth of an inch at a time.
You talk about Southwest, but that's exactly what we look at with US Corporate Wellness. We hire coaches, and that's what we're looking for. It's nice that they have XYZ background, but the first and foremost, it's can they listen? Can they connect?
Yeah.
Do they smile? It, you know, are they the person you'd want to spend time with? Because that's what they're doing. So
yeah, I loved what this guy said in the pharmaceutical company. And he said, so I interview you, and you are the hottest shot biochemist that has ever been produced by, you know, Duke University or what have you. And I am just so enthralled by you, I can't see straight. But he said, we have a process. And I finished the interview, and yes, I'm the CEO, but then you have to do what he calls run the gauntlet. And he said, running the gauntlet is 15 short interviews with 15 different people. And it starts with the receptionist. And if the guy who cleans up afterwards is there at the time, it includes him or her. And, you know, as well as people who are managers and other staffers. But he said, any single one of those people can veto that fancy 4.0 average PhD biochemist from Duke University.
Love it. Love it. Just two more. You're consistently talking about reimagine, reinvent, innovate. I'd love to hear, kind of flip the mirror around. How are you doing that in your own life, your own business this year, now?
Well, do you want to hear the personal answer to that?
Yes, bring it.
Well, it's to keep from getting a divorce is the answer. My wife, and she's right, has gone absolutely crazy bonkers bananas. And when we see the picture from Australia, we know why. Over climate change, sustainability, and so on. And she has threatened me with divorce if I do not get a lot more sustainability into the stuff that I am writing and preaching these days. And I think she is absolutely right. So if you walked into my office right now, I mean, yes, I use my iBooks and my Kindles, but you would see a pile of hardback books that talk about sustainability, which incidentally is wellness on another plane.
Sure.
No plastic straws. Nobody who's listening to us is allowed to use a plastic straw again. Can we have that as an ironclad agreement?
Some low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's, again, the point is, which is what we've talked about this entire discussion, it's little habits.
Exactly. You know,
just the fact that she has made me awake, which is a lot more important than any book that I've read, made me awake means I'm paying attention to little things where collectively, again, as wellness people know much better than I do, you can make a huge difference. Nobody goes from being barely able to walk to winning the 100-yard dash at the next Olympics. You make it one eighth of a step a time. And I've seen some people in my wellness clinic who are, morbidly obese, and I've watched my wonderful coaches working with them and, you know, treating them with the same care, same thoughtfulness, and just getting them to go along an extra eighth of an inch. And I will also say, that not everybody, not all of my physical therapists, and there are probably 10 of them in the office, not all of them are skinny as a rail. And that is even helpful. Seriously. You know, it's a little intimidating to work with a bunch of people, all of whom look like Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was winning world championships.
Sure. Yeah, it makes it more real. It's more authentic.
Yeah, it's real. And the way, again, the wellness thing is about micrometers, and it's and it's all real, and it's about being around, you know, real people. And, you know, I love this place that I'm working in. They're all very, very different, but they're exceptionally thoughtful. And, you know, they look different. They're short, they're tall, they're men, they're women. Half of the women are much stronger than the other, than everybody except one monster man who is trying to straighten my leg out and tries to kill me each time I come in. But we have a wonderful rapport as he does it.
Last question, Tom, and really appreciate your time today. Just wide open, any final words of wisdom for those that are either trying to improve their own health and wellness or trying to help others do the same?
Well, let me say, and I'm not putting down 90% of the rest of the world. If you are in the wellness business, and I am sorry to say that I don't spend a lot of time in church, but I will say you're really doing the Lord's work. You are helping human beings get better, extend their life, even more important than extending it, which is half irrelevant, is making every day a little bit better. And so, you know, there's back to our nurses with the tablets. There's a lot of bureaucratic nonsense and so on. But you have an opportunity that the other thing I want to say to any given wellness coach, if you stay in this business for 10 years or 15 years, you will save a lot more lives than any surgeon at Massachusetts General Hospital. You know, God bless her or him who is the surgeon, and God bless the guy who did my knee. But you have the opportunity to dramatically reshape the lives over a 10-year period of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And I don't care how good that surgeon is. He can only do 4 knees a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I said, I'm not religious with a capital R in any way, shape, or form, but it really is, you're a blessing to people if you do your jobs right and get inside their heads and make them feel better about themselves as human beings. You know, it's one of the reasons I'm delighted to talk to you is I can't think of a greater profession other than probably nursing. And I say it to healthcare people. I said, I was talking to a big group and, you know, they're all overwhelmed by bureaucracy. And I said, I know that an awful lot of your day is BS and, you know, God bless the insurance company guy down the road. But I said, unlike the average bureaucrat in the tall building in Boston, when you come to work, even if you're an accountant at the hospital, you get to directly improve the lives of hundreds of people. And boy, what a gift that is.
Yeah.
You know, why ever those who are listening to us chose the wellness business, you know, you picked the good one.
Great way to wrap. I really appreciate it. Tom, your schedule is over the top. I appreciate you taking the time for us. Thanks again.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was fun. There's always a risk, obviously, when you finally speak with someone you've looked up to for 30 years, that it'll end up being a disappointment. Thankfully, that wasn't the case here, was it? The 77-year-old they call the Red Bull of management thinking still has just as much, or maybe more, energy and passion for creating positive change as he had at age 39 when his original bestseller hit the bookstands. A big, big-time thank you to Tom Peters and to Shelley Dolly for helping coordinate our busy schedules and actually make this thing happen. Thank you also to each one of you who've taken the time to subscribe to the podcast, especially those of you who've shared it with others, left a positive review. It helps other people find us. Our audience has grown 4 times over the last 12 months, and that's on you. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I cannot tell you how much we appreciate that. If you ever need anything, you can find us at catalystcoachinginstitute.com or email us at results@catalystcoachinginstitute.com. Now, it's time to go after better. One decision, one step, one moment at a time. Tom aptly reminded us, excellence is the next 5 minutes. Better is too. Let's make the next 5 minutes count. Thanks as always for joining us. This is Dr. Bradford Cooper signing off. Make it a great rest of your day, and I'll speak with you soon on the next episode of the Catalyst Health, Wellness, and Performance Podcast.